The title of this morning's address is The Apostle Paul. The Apostle Paul is one of the most controversial figures in Christianity. In any discussion of human sexuality, someone will invariably quote Saint Paul. He can be accused of being homophobic, anti-Semitic, and misogynistic. In his writing, Paul does seem to condemn homosexual acts. He does say that the Jewish people are blind when it comes to interpreting their own scriptures. And he does say that women should be silent in church. But Paul also wrote, "Three things remain: faith, hope, and love, and the greatest of these is love." His other great contribution is that he advised his communities when they are discussing a problem, they should ask themselves, what would Jesus do in this situation? And then his other contribution that I like was that we see things but darkly. In other words, we don't have all the answers. And how different the world would be if humanity remembered that love is the greatest virtue. How differently humans would act if they asked themselves, how would Jesus behave in these circumstances? And if we remembered that we don't have all the answers. Paul is such a towering figure in the Christian story that he's often referred to as the apostle. No name, just the apostle. So it's easy to forget that he wasn't one of the 12 original disciples chosen by Jesus. He never met Jesus while Jesus lived. We know that he was a persecutor of the Christians. He had what is called his conversion experience. And this experience changed him from being a persecutor of Christians to becoming a follower of Jesus. In his lifetime, Paul traveled most of what was then the known world to spread the message of Jesus. To try to understand Paul, it is important to remember that Paul was a Pharisee, and Pharisees were the strictest sect within the Jewish religion. He was a Roman citizen, and he was born in Tarsus, which was part of the Greek world. Being born a Jew outside of Judea, a Roman citizen, and having been brought up in Greek culture are important elements in his story. As a Pharisee, Paul believed that anyone hanged on a tree was cursed by God. That's in the book of Deuteronomy. So Paul then said, how could the followers of Jesus proclaim that Jesus was the Messiah? He had been hanged on a tree. He was on the cross. It was his deep Jewish faith that made Paul a persecutor of Christians. And it was his deep faith in Jesus that made him a champion of his message. So Paul never did things in half measures. He always committed himself fully. There are three accounts of Paul's conversion experience in the New Testament, and each one of them is slightly different. Later, Paul claimed that the risen Jesus had appeared to him. But unfortunately for us, Paul does not give details of these life-defining experiences. He just says they happened, but he doesn't tell us the nitty-gritty details. Then, as now, people either love Paul or hate him. Paul is particularly important in Reformed Christianity, and yet Paul's writings have caused dreadful divisions within the Protestant traditions. You have one lot who read one part of Paul and said, yes, we are saved by grace. We have the Calvinists then who said, but look at here, God can decide whether or not he's going to send you to heaven or hell before you're ever even born. And that's that predestination. So really, really divisive person. There's one writer of Paul who's written a book, St. Paul A.N. Wilson is his name, and he said that Christianity could more appropriately be called the religion of Paul. And I used to think that, now I slightly disagree. Paul's writings are the earliest surviving Christian writings. They predate the Gospels. The New Testament is a very slim part of any Bible. Most of it is taken up with the Jewish scriptures. And the majority of the New Testament is Paul's work, or work that is attributed to him. In the Gospels and the other books of the New Testament, those writers are anonymous. We don't know anything about them. We don't know anything about Matthew or Mark or Luke. They don't tell us anything personally. They just narrate. However, in Paul's writing, his personality seems to leap from the letters. He begins one letter with, I'm amazed at your behavior about something. You know, Paul's personality seems to leap out of us at us. At times he is angry, exasperated, cajoling. Money is an issue with Paul. He's very like Father Ted. The collection he made to support the, as they call it, the saints in Jerusalem, arrives in Jerusalem by a very circuitous route. In his letter to the Corinthians, he claims, I don't ask for money for my preaching. He's taken this as a great thing. You know, I'm allowed to ask for it. I don't ask you to give me money. I do it for free. But he didn't tell the Corinthians that the Macedonian church were paying him already. You know, he was a bit slippery when it came to money. A second century Christian writer gives us a description of Paul. He said he was a man of middling size, his hair was scanty, and his legs were a little crooked, and his knees were wide apart. He had a large nose, and his eyebrows met, and his nose was somewhat long. We seem to have an awful lot of information about Paul. But that changes when we realize that new discoveries about Greek archaeology and culture changes what we think we know. Recent discoveries show that Paul was trained in Greek rhetoric. And rhetoric was a formal way of writing and debating. When Paul wrote a letter, he was following a set formula. According to Greek rhetoric, when something was good, the writer had to appear happy. When they were making a complaint, the writer was to be angry and show their anger. And funnily, that physical description of Paul is a classic description of a Greek leader. Whenever a Greek leader is being described, that description is used. It's like when we talk about, someone mentions, he was very handsome. He was tall, dark, and handsome. We never say small, attractive, and blonde. We say tall, dark, and handsome. That's what that description of him was. When Paul had his conversion experience, I think in our mind we think that he converted to being a Christian. But there was no Christian church at that time. There were small groups of Jesus followers scattered around Jerusalem and Judea. These were people who believed that Jesus was the promised Jewish Messiah. Paul joined one of these communities and later went on to work spreading the message. He travelled in the Greek world, where he preached in the synagogues and founded communities based in cities. And when the community was established, Paul moved on to establish another group. So that we forget that it wasn't an existing church Paul joined. It wasn't another church that he founded. So at that time, there was no official church teaching of what it meant to be a follower of Jesus. So when he left the groups he founded, invariably questions would arise. What do we do in this situation? For example, one was, if you were Jewish, if you weren't Jewish, could you join? Or did you have to become Jewish and then become part of the group? Could you eat with people who weren't Jewish? Could Jews and non-Jews meet together to share bread and wine? All those sort of questions had to be answered. And when a question arose, the community wrote to Paul asking for advice. What do we do with this situation? And Paul's letters that we have are his responses to their queries. It was a two-way correspondence, but we have only one side of the correspondence available to us. Paul never sat down and wrote a treatise on what it is to be a Christian. He was advising on particular problems in his communities. We only have one side of the correspondence. We don't know what the questions were that Paul was answering. And yet we try to solve modern problems, not even knowing what the questions he was answering, using his letters. One of his letters, it is said, is an amalgamation of five different letters can be picked out. Someone once asked at a lecture, how do academics know this? And the response was, well, if you were reading Barbara Cartland romance and then you were reading Jane Austen, if you amalgamated the two, you'd know they were different. The language is different. The words used are different. The syntax is different. So care must be taken with his writings. You can't take a soundbite from one and apply it to every situation. In Corinthians 1, chapter 6, verse 9 to 11, we have Paul's so-called condemnation of homosexuality. Now, there's another one, but we won't go into that. But in that so-called condemnation of homosexuality, the sentence also continues with he condemns idolaters, adulterers, thieves, the greedy, drunkards, slanderers, and swindlers. They're all on a par. And nobody ever said, well, he swindled, or he was dishonest, or he was drunk. He's not going to heaven. Very few Irish in heaven, if that's the case. What about Paul's attitude to women? Paul did indeed say women should be silent in church. Yet, on the other hand, women held leadership roles within Paul's communities. When he wrote to some of those people, he mentioned the women by names and greeted them by name in the letters. But listen, like us, Paul was of his time, his culture, and his life experience. Just because he has come down to us doesn't mean he was without his faults. As a Roman citizen, Paul would have grown up steeped in Roman and Greek traditions where women were relegated to the home. They were never expected to go outside their home. Today, we have the expression, the decadent days of the Roman Empire. We think that they were always having orgies and all the thing. However, the Emperor Augustus, in his reign of 27 years, passed morality laws. And these laws were enforced. They weren't just on the statute books, they were enforced. Augustus exiled his daughter because of her adultery. Augustus was still alive in Paul's lifetime. So you can say that Paul was brought up with a very Victorian moral attitude, possibly even more strict than the Victorians. And we know social change develops only gradually. Just think about it. Slavery was abolished in 1865 in America. Still fighting to achieve equality between African Americans and white Americans. Attitudes do not change overnight. The fact that women were active in the early church is really remarkable for that time. And from his writings, we do know that the church in Corinth was noted by the spiritual gifts of its members, the prophecies, the healed, the spoken tongues. Those Christians must have been the talk of the neighborhood. Talking in tongues means just continuous stream of unintelligible rubbish coming out of your mouth. I remember speaking once with a guy who was once a born-again Christian, and I said to him, you know, did you ever speak in tongues? And he says, oh, yeah. I said, was that not very hard? He said, it's so easy when you get into it. He says, the problem is stopping yourself. So can you imagine a load of women out in public going to a meeting and behaving like this? It's also possible when you think like that, that Paul was being protective of that church. He was saying to the women, maybe tone it down a bit. Another example is how we change, how attitudes change. In the 1990s, in the early 1990s, this church was between ministers, and a discussion was held about whether or not they would be happy to have a minister who happened to be gay. And they thought, well, we're not quite ready for that yet. Now, if somebody came along to be the minister here and they were gay, wouldn't bat an eyelid. But that's taken us 30 years to grow and to change. In some Christian communities, Paul's instructions are still used to deny the women a full role in their community. His words are taken out of context and used to hurt other groups. Paul was inspired by his new faith. He was also a fallible human being, a man of his times. His writings must be interpreted in the context in which they are written, in the knowledge that they are an incomplete source. In the first letter to the Corinthians, and there was a second letter, the first one he said, when I wrote to you beforehand, so we know at least one letter is missing. We need to remember all of those warnings. And also to remember his words about, we don't even know what the questions he was answering were. And some of his work still speaks very true. The greatest virtue is love. In any situation, if we ask, what would Jesus do? certainly would never get answer that question was burn them at the stake. And remember that we do not understand everything. Amen.